The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hi there, on a Thursday. You ever have that relative that drops in for a visit and won't leave? That's me. Jeff Munn, voice of ASU women's basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FCG. We're going to talk about that. Yeah, we might. In for Brad on this Thursday on the Brad Sesmat Show, sports360az.com. We partner with azcentralsports.com on a busy Thursday and a great lineup of guests. Fox 10 Sports Director Jude LaCava, who not only knows about as much as anybody about things on the field and things off the field in this town, will join us to kind of take an overview of where we're at sports-wise in this market right now. And then later on, Goody at the Movies. Bill Goody-Kunz, AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic, will preview Incredibles 2, which I think is going to be released next week. My daughter is attending a screening. Actually, they're going to a screening today. Preview screening of Incredibles 2, and Bill will also have his thoughts about a movie I kind of like to see, Tag. And we'll also discuss something I've talked about the last couple of days, and that's Fox's coverage of the U.S. Open Golf Tournament, which got underway this morning. It's a big day for the Fox Network. They have the World Cup, which started this morning, and the U.S. Open Golf Tournament. The golf right now is on FS1, the soccer's on Fox, and then Fox will pick up the golf later. Why am I doing this? I don't work for Fox. I mean, it's, you know, but anyway, it's a big day for them. And we'll talk about the coverage of those events with Bill coming up in our regular visit with Goody. We also have with us, of course, as always, the ever-present and always available Eric Sorensen, the producer of this program, the vice president of all things at sports360az.com, who now magically joins us as I telepathically bring him in on the e-cam.
Hello, man.
See, and I got a headache doing that, too. Boy, that was tough.
Day three of three for you.
Yeah.
Day three of three.
And you can tell I'm getting a little punchy.
You're fine. You're fine. Is my camera crooked? No, it's not.
No. What'd you do last night, E?
I watched some football.
Football, F-U-T-B-O-L.
Correct.
You were out at the Phoenix Rising match.
I heard you, but I did not see you.
That's the way people like to consume me most often.
I'm just going to say this, Jeff.
Yes.
I was skeptical of the Rising.
Have you been out there before?
I have. Okay. I went last year to a game, and I was like, this isn't bad. And then this year, last night was my second game.
Mm-hmm.
They're really fun.
It is.
It's fun. The games move fast, and there's not a lot of wasted time unless the guys are flopping due to fake injuries and things like that.
Oh, they never do that.
No, they never do.
You're right. And I think one of the things that I've learned in the 2 years I've been involved with it is there is a misnomer about soccer that it tends to be boring. It doesn't develop quickly. American fans don't like it because it doesn't move fast. It moves really fast.
And it's a good brand of soccer. I mean,
it's tremendous.
There's good players out there.
Yeah.
And to think, I know last night was dollar beer night. And I know that I believe college kids got in free with an ID.
Yeah.
But they had 5,700 people out there when it was 113 degrees.
Yeah, huh?
And an outdoor venue to watch minor league soccer in the dead of summer. That's not bad.
If MLS, and they are watching this, they have to be impressed. They are saying, you know, we've got to have a facility that can keep fans cool in the summer. And Phoenix Rising management knows that. But I think what they've seen so far, they have to be impressed with. And you're right. The quality of soccer is terrific.
And the team's good.
Yeah. And
which always helps.
Las Vegas Lights FC was defeated by Rising 4-0 last night. We say nil in soccer, by the way. I heard a guy on Fox today during the Russia-Saudi Arabia match say 4-0. And
uh-oh.
I thought, wait a minute.
At least you said match, not game. Because I used to always say the game, and people corrected me, so it's a match.
Yeah, right. Drogba did not play last night. You were telling me, and I admit I didn't know, but he's doing some World Cup TV.
Well, our buddy Greg Esposito, who I went to the game with, informed me of that.
Who knows all.
Well, and last night was his first Rising experience, and he'd been wanting to go for a long time as well, and he had a lot of fun, too.
I saw his tweets, and he had a good time, and he'll be back. So I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. The AC was probably working better in the Brad Sesmat suite than it was in the press box, so...
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt either. So that is one thing that happened last night. Let's get to the rest of the news of the day, and it's brought to you by Sagicor Now. I was thinking about this last night. You could kind of focus on the word Sagicor, but the bigger, more important word in those two words you see on the screen is now. Because now is the time, if you're a young adult and you're just starting a family, to start thinking about making certain that they're covered, that they're taken care of in the event of something happens that you just can't plan for. That's where Sagicor Now comes in. If you go to sagicornow.com, you can find out about the very convenient, easy, and affordable ways they can set you up with protection. Peace of mind is the term I always use, and it is peace of mind. It gives you the security of knowing that if something happens to you, the people you love are taken care of. We appreciate Sagicor Now and Sagicor for their support of our efforts at sports360az.com. D-backs lost yesterday to the Pirates 5-4. We're going to get into this with Jude LaCava in our next segment in one respect. The Pirates got a four-run second and a singular run in the fourth and had the bases loaded in the fifth, and Torey Lovullo had no choice but to go get Zach Greinke. Greinke at the moment has a 5-5 record with a 3.87 earned run average. His start yesterday, he gave up 5 earned runs on 5 hits with 4 walks and 7 strikeouts. Now, 4 walks and 7 strikeouts are going to chew up a lot of pitches, and he was at 101 pitches in the fifth inning. It's easy to poke at the Greinke deal and say, you know, especially now, what were they thinking at the time? And it was questioned at the time the deal was made because of the years and the money and how it would restrict a team that does not have all the financial resources of the Dodgers or the Yankees or other major market teams. And you're seeing that now. And I'll say this, too. I remember last October, or right after the D-backs were eliminated in the postseason, Pedro Gomez, who's a regular contributor to the show, was on with Brad and said he talked to a National League scout who told him that in this scout's estimation, Greinke no longer possessed a put-away pitch. And by that I mean if he gets to two strikes on a hitter with first and second and nobody out, he can't get a strikeout, or second and third, nobody out. But he can't get a strikeout. And this was the I remember the time the deal was made. A lot of baseball people, in fact, one in particular, and I kind of didn't get too involved in it because it was Keith Law of ESPN, who's really had an axe to grind with the D-backs for a long time. But he said at the time, they are paying 6 years to get three. And the 2 years that Greinke has had with the D-backs have not been all that bad. He won 17 games a year ago, but this is year three. And he is 5-5, and his ERA is just below 4. Now, I want to mention one other thing about baseball. Last night, the Padres beat the Cardinals in St. Louis. It gave them their fifth consecutive series win. The Padres have won 7 of their last 10. They're in fifth place still in the National League West, but they are 5.5 games out of first and 4 games below 500. You would say, well, the Padres, they don't have a lot of money to spend. Well, they may not need to. They could use an upgrade in pitching. And the guy that's been mentioned a lot in trades, Chris Archer. Here's what Chris Archer is doing at the moment. He's got 3 years left after this year on a deal he signed with the Tampa Bay Rays. This year, with a 3-5 record, he is being paid $6,416,000, or roughly $27.5 million less than Zach Greinke with comparable numbers. He's 3-4 actually with an ERA of 4.24. He has top of the rotation stuff. His numbers are very similar to Greinke's, but going to San Diego, of course, he'd be pitching in a big ballpark. Do not be surprised if the Padres get involved in the trade market, also because they have a boatload of really good prospects in their farm system. They could make this a 5-team race. They already have, but they could even get more toward the top of the division before the trade deadline. I really do think that that is very much within the realm of possibility. Most everything else going on in sports, we mentioned the rising win last night. The World Cup started today. The U.S. Open Golf Tournament starts today. The Suns continue workouts, looking at players for the number one draft pick. I will utilize some time later on in the show to talk about a couple of people who left us, unfortunately, over the last 24 to 48 hours. But there he is. Also, David Johnson continues to hold out from the Cardinals. And I don't anticipate that much is going to change in that story over the next couple of weeks. I think this is something, like I said earlier in the week, I really see this going beyond the mini camp, but not it'll get resolved before training camp. I really believe that, and I hope so, for the sake of both parties, for the Cardinals and for David Johnson. That's one of a number of things we can discuss with our good friend Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director, who will talk about a whole bunch of things going on in town. I always love it when Jude comes on with Brad, and I'm going to try to do the best I can to ask the same kind of good questions Brad does. See how I do. Next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com. Back on the Brad Sesmatch Show, we'll be joined in just a couple of moments by Fox 10's Jude LaCava. I'm Jeff Munn, by the way. Radio voice of, wrong side, Arizona State women's basketball. Stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC. I get around a few places here and there. You know, it's just whatever you need to do to pay the bills. A couple people that I know left us within the last 24 to 48 hours. I'm going to do the one you may not be familiar with first. Ann Donovan was a very well-respected basketball coach in women's basketball. Back in 2003, I was asked to fill in on a Phoenix Mercury broadcast. I was not doing the ASU games at the time, and I wasn't really certain whether I could do basketball and do it well. I'd done it once before and kind of struggled through it, but got through it. But Ann Donovan could not have been nicer to me in doing a pregame interview, and every time I encountered her after that, she always struck me the same. Very easygoing, steady, but boy, was she a success as a player, as a coach. She won championships, gold medals. She passed away yesterday due to heart failure at the age of 56, and is a tremendous loss in the not only in the women's basketball community, but in the sports world as well. When you think of classy people, she's right up at the top of that list. We also lost somebody here locally Tuesday night, Mike Tulumelo, who covered the Suns for many years for the East Valley Tribune back in the salad days of print media in this town, when we had two thriving major daily newspapers, the Republic and the Tribune, competing against one another. Mike, trademark newsboy cap. I love newsboy caps. I have one of my own. And I said this on Twitter last night. Mike, who passed away at the age of 62, he had been working out at the Y. He was doing some swimming, and as soon as he got out of the pool, he collapsed. And it just reminds you again just how frail this existence of ours can be. Mike, I said this on Twitter last night. He was really the prototype of what a writer, whether it be a sports writer, a news writer, an author, should be. His words on paper spoke way louder than he did in person. Mike was a very quiet guy, very low-key, didn't seek a lot of attention. But boy, he was a hard-working, dogged reporter. He got the facts. He was not a cheerleader. He reported on a lot of unpleasant things involving the Suns over his time, and it was the true measure of the man that he handled both with the same kind of professionalism and class. Good man. And I feel for his wife, and I've met his son. He and Kathy have a son that I encountered. He got a job a couple summers ago at the Bashes I shop at, and boy, you could tell that young man, very proud of his mom and dad. Mike's widow, Kathy, has also been in print journalism for many, many years. It is impossible to consider that we'll see the likes of a Mike Tulumelo again, in part because print journalism, as we've talked about many times on the show, is changing. Now, I talk to students all the time at the Cronkite School, and I tell them print journalism isn't dying, it's transitioning. It's going from what we pick up off, or what old guys like me pick up off the front porch, to the computer screen, to the phone, to the tablet. So it's transitioning. We're never going to get to a moment where we don't have print journalism. We're never going to get to a moment where we don't have really good writers. I look at a website like The Athletic, or the people who write here on sports360az.com. They are proof that print journalism still has a very strong place with the American sports fan, with Americans in general. And guys like Mike Tulumeto really embodied what it means to be a writer when I say he wrote louder than he spoke. Most writers that I know really try to achieve that goal where they say, I want to be louder with my written words than with my spoken words. And he certainly was that. Not all sports writers are like that, but Mike in particular was very good at that. And just a tremendous shock to a lot of us here in town who were around the Suns at that time. And it's ironic because I wrote a column last weekend for Sports360AZ.com marking the 25th anniversary of the Suns' appearance in the NBA Finals, and Mike obviously covered that. And it was a much different town, much different. We were almost like a little village during those during that whole season after acquiring Charles Barkley. And certainly Mike was right in the middle of that, covering things on a day-to-day basis for the East Valley Tribune. The Tribune still exists. It's just a website now. And it really makes me sad in a lot of ways that we don't have two newspapers. And I've just got done saying that print journalism is kind of transitioning to more of online. But it still kind of bothers me in a way that we don't have competition between, maybe we do, and I'm just not aware of it. But you think about all the great writers that work for different websites, and hopefully competitive journalism, like existed between Mike Tulumeto and Bob Young back in the Suns days, will continue. But I just wanted to make mention of that. Our thoughts and our prayers are with Mike's widow, Kathy, her family. And boy, it just you talk about shocking, a shocking, shocking loss, Mike Tulumeto, yesterday. Coming up later on in the show, Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Gannett chief film and media critic, will share his thoughts on Incredibles 2 and Tag. I have a joke line to give Bill, and I tweeted about it, so you might be ahead of me on it. And we'll continue with more of the Brad Sesmatt Show after this break on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. Back on a Thursday, the Brad Sesmatt Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. Jared Nielsen, by the way, is the person responsible for making me look presentable on television. For that, he ought to be up for sainthood. We're talking in our first segment about the performance yesterday of Zach Greinke with the D-backs. And the day before, Clay Buchholz had a bit of a rough outing. I'm not going to get too excited about that because most of his other starts have been pretty effective. But Greinke is one that I think this is becoming a growing issue. And my good friend, Mr. Sorensen, can join me on this. I'm going to get the game-by-game breakdowns just this year for Zach Greinke. And I'm not second guessing in the classic sense of, gee, the D-backs made a bad decision. Look, they wanted to contend right away, okay? So they did. They went out and they made a deal to be contenders immediately. It did not work out well at all in 2016, but it worked out much better last year. But Eric, you look at it, this is a guy that at $34 million a year, you would expect Zach Greinke to be at the top of your rotation. He did have a slow start to his year because of injuries in spring training. But consider this, he has yet to go past seven innings in a start this year. His pitch count has been an issue at times. He had one outing where he's given up a run on three hits, and that was early in April against the Giants. He had a quality start at Oakland in a game they lost. His wins have occurred against teams like the Miami Marlins. Actually, we're going to get Jude LaCava in on this. So let me transition. We'll get back to Zach in a minute because I want to talk to Jude about it. But as I bring in Fox 10 sports director Jude LaCava, maybe someday he'll just run all of Fox Sports. Who knows? But I've always said,
I wish.
I've always said, I believe more in Jude's hunches than most people's facts. That's a little inside between me and Jude. And I'm still playing your hunch, my friend. We don't need to go into the details. We can do that off the air. But just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it ain't going to happen. So I'm still riding your hunch.
For sure. Well, you got to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like I said, your hunches are better than most people's facts. Zach Greinke, What can we – is there anything realistic that the D-backs can do if it gets to a point where they've got to move him? I just can't see a scenario where there's anybody that's going to step up and say, and I'm not trying to write him out of town, but come on, the guy's 5-5. He hasn't gone more than seven innings in a start, and you're paying him $34 million. Something has to give.
You know, Jeff, I think that, listen, he's not a $30 million pitcher, obviously, but I saw his performance yesterday, watched carefully, and, you know, when you come to these conclusions that back up your hunches, you talk to a really seasoned baseball scouts to really hone in on what's going on with Zach. And I think what's going on, you know, yesterday was a classic example of overthrowing. And when he overthrows, he loses his greatest asset, which is command of his pitches. He is, and I was talking to a teammate of his a few months back, and he said, when you watch his bullpen sessions, when you watch Zach when he's on, he's like a Picasso. He's a master. He paints the edges. He has tremendous control of his pitches. He did not yesterday. And, you know, you said it all there, a 5-5 pitcher for $30 million. Are you kidding? But the problem you have right now is that, and I don't want to be suspicious of Zach Greinke, but I felt that when the season started, Zach's primary goal, and look, he's a brilliant guy. He's very much a self-taught, self-made pitcher. And there's a story when he was starting out and he was being scouted, and the scouts were on him at that time. He was a young guy. And he said to the scouts, he said, what do you want me to be? You want me to be a finesse pitcher? Do you want me to be a power pitcher? And what he went and he left that question unanswered. He went out, and it might have been when he was coming up in the minor leagues. He was a finesse pitcher for the first inning. He was a power pitcher for the second inning. He alternated. He was that good. Okay,
yeah.
He was that good. This is a true story. He was that good. Now, having said that, he's lost velocity. He's not topping out at 91, 92, which is pretty significant. He's throwing in the high 80s. His control, generally speaking, is still pretty good. But I think he's no longer that established ace of the staff, and they're on the hook for a lot of money. You're going to have to pay part of his salary if another team in the hunt says, look, we need a really strong number two, number three type guy that can win a game for us, win some games towards the end of the season. You're going to have to pay part of his salary. And the other thing that is still a stigma for Zach, whether he likes it or not, he's never been a big game pitcher. And we saw what happened in last year's wild card. He's never been that guy that answers the call in a pressure playoff situation. And I'm not trying to rank on him. I just think that's his history. You know, the late Cotton Fitzsimmons used to say, you are what your record says you are. And Zach has not been I'm going to step up when the team needs me most type of starter. So, you know, look, it's a real issue with a team that's trying to do it on a budget, with a team that's trying to battle the powerhouse teams like the Dodgers and the Giants that I think have significantly, obviously, more resources. So you're really in a bind, Jeff, in regards to what do you do with Zach Greinke. And I'm not so sure he didn't want to delay his start so he could get his numbers this year and really put himself in position to continue to lobby his body of work as a future Hall of Famer. I think that means a lot to him. He would love to look back at his career and look at his candidacy for the Hall of Fame in a strong way. So I'm just a little suspect of some of his motivations. I'm a little suspect of, you know, what can you do now at this point in the contract? And that's a real dilemma for Mike Hazen.
Well, and here's a couple other thoughts real quick with Fox 10's Jude LaCava. Back in his Kansas City days, he had been diagnosed with social anxiety disorder. When he signed the contract here, my first thought was, is he going to be able to deal with being in the spotlight? I mean, I was at a spring training game in 2016, and they were making PA announcements about come out opening night to see Zach Greinke. And that announcement, I can speak from personal experience, had never been made in the Schilling and Johnson days. And then when you think about there, a lot of people in baseball think the Yankees are going to be out, among other teams, looking for starting pitching. They are now. But Greinke's got veto power, and I would think that he has to be smart enough to realize, well, even if they could work out a deal, I can't go to New York because that's a pressure cooker I just couldn't deal with.
Think about this. His best year, statistically, numbers-wise, by far, when he was pitching behind Clayton Kershaw.
That's right.
He was remarkable, and that put him in position to get this contract. But there's also an interesting track record here, whether it be Kansas City, whether it be Milwaukee, whether it be the Dodgers or Arizona. How is somebody that good, that exceptional, and I'm talking in previous years, why is he bouncing around like this? What's really going on? And listen, I'm not here to criticize Zach. He's a brilliant talent, you know, for at least in the previous seasons, but he doesn't necessarily present well. I don't know if that's by choice. You know, it's a strain. Anybody watching a post-game interview with Zach, it's a strain. And I always feel like a pro player today should get media training to present himself in a way that is beneficial not only to himself and his brand, but his team. And, you know, it's a struggle sometimes to really get comfortable. You know, Archie Bradley is like a bonus, man. You know, I love talking to him. He's personable. But I guess what I'm saying is, don't you want to at least project who you are in good times and bad times? Luis Gonzalez understood this better than anybody.
Yeah.
That's why he's so well-liked and appreciated by fans and everybody around town. But this is the type of thing I'm saying, is that it's curious to me. Why somebody so good bounced around with all these teams, and where does he go from here? But look, I'm impressed with Hazen. I think that all those rumors, Jeff, in the off season around the baseball winter meetings were very legit. I think they were trying to figure it out. If we can move Zach, what can we get in return? How do we handle this contract? This has been discussed within the organization, and I believe it'll continue to be discussed. Question will be, how much of that contract will the D-backs have to pay?
That's the huge contract. Let me bounce around to a couple other things real quick. David Johnson. I don't see that going into training camp, do you?
I don't, no. I think that DJ, we're coming off a catastrophic injury where he missed 15 games. He understands you're one play away. Their running backs are not valued like they used to be in the league, so why not try to get paid now? He certainly doesn't want to suffer another injury. I get it. And look, I think if he handles it well, a reasonable extension is fair. They've done it with Larry. They did it last year when they extended him to this year. He's too much of the current here and now face of the franchise to not get a new deal. I do believe before game number one, they'll have a deal in place for David Johnson.
The Suns pick, I've posed this question to a couple people this week in filling on the show, and you and I are both kind of gym rat type of guys, and we love basketball and we love dissecting the game. I think part of the reason that you go with DeAndre Ayton is because the NBA may look a little different. This is my viewpoint in 3 years. When I see a team like Boston in Game 7 of the East Finals miss about 43 three-pointers, there's a part of me that says, somebody in this league is going to try to start doing something different, and that different might be get the ball inside.
I think that's a very feasible trend. I mean, look, Mike D'Antoni transformed the game with 7 seconds or less, and to me, Steve Kerr, with the personnel, the great personnel that he's had, has extended it to championship after championship at Golden State. But what goes around comes around. What's old again is new again, and I could see that happening. I do think the tempo and pace of play continues to dictate. I think on talent alone, DeAndre Ayton is special because he can hit that mid-range shot. He's not bad, even from the three-point line, and he can protect the rim. He's got to develop defensively. He's a specimen, to say the least, and it appears that he's out to prove himself. So I can't believe it's not going to be DeAndre Ayton. And this is the first time in 8 years, Jeff, that the Suns really have a curiosity that hasn't been there in 8 years. Hard to imagine 8 years of this drought, no playoffs. that they can finally start to recapture the old Suns fan base that, that was so passionate for so many years. I think if they play it right, they might even be able to get a very good point guard, a young point guard that could come in and grow with this young base. So I'm optimistic for the first time in a long, long time that based on their assets, they have a chance to really put an extensive core together that could eventually, and again, the people should not get impatient. It's still going to take 2 years. You can't take a 20-year-old kid out there and play him 35 minutes a game. They've got to be cautious and careful with a guy like Ayton and not to overplay him, give him time to adjust, and then see where this goes. But this is a tipping point favorable to the Suns in the first time in a very, very long time.
I got about 90 seconds. I hate to compress this on you, but
go ahead.
We both know and we both like Brian Colangelo. And obviously, we both feel very strongly about his dad. Whatever happened in Philadelphia, it just breaks your heart because this is a good basketball guy. Yeah, he's not as comfortable as his father around the media, but you and I both know him from his days here. And nobody in that office worked harder than he did. Nobody had more respect among the employees at the Suns than he did. And I don't know what his future is. I don't know how his dad has handled this, but it just breaks your heart.
It's been very difficult. I can tell you that firsthand. Anytime your name is out there and there's a stigma with this story, I think Brian was forced to resign to try to stop the story. And, you know, my sense is that Brian will learn from this. You know, Jerry is one of a kind. And I think when it comes to Brian, there was a certain super sensitivity to media criticism. You just have to realize that you need thick skin. I don't know if Brian ever totally grasped that. Jerry would look you straight in the eye, and he commanded the room. Brian, as you said, and rightfully so, I mean, two-time executive of the year, a very talented, hardworking guy. I'm going to say this. He's going to regroup. He may have to do some time over there in Europe and maybe look at something alternative for a few years, but I don't think he's done with the game just yet. I say that out of respect for the Colangelo name. I think he's learned from this, and I believe that is even though people are writing him off, I would never write off a Colangelo, and I think Brian in a few years will be back in the NBA, and he'll step back from this and learn what he has to learn from this whole scenario. But he's not done yet. He's too talented of a guy, and there'll be another opportunity.
Well, you know how I feel about your hunches. And so I hope you're right on that one, and I hope you're right on the one you and I talked about, and I'm still riding it. Hey, I appreciate it, Jude. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Great to talk to you.
Same here.
All right, buddy. You take care. Good luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Jude LaCava, who's been a mentor to me on a number of things, and don't get me started. He's one of those guys. I'll get emotional because he's one of my pals. Bill Gutekunst at the movies. We'll preview Incredibles 2. We'll preview Tag. And can Fox get the U.S. Open right this time? We'll discuss it with the AZ Central chief film and media critic next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. It is Thursday. Brad says you got to have a life outside sports. Now he tells me. No, let's look at some movies with our friend AZ Central Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Gutekunst. And I want to get to the movies we're previewing first, and then I'm going to get some thoughts from you about TV sports and one event in particular. But the two movies that we're going to talk about, let's start with Incredibles 2. I got to tell you this story real quick, Bill. I'm driving in Pine Top a couple weeks ago, and I look at a movie marquee, and it says Ocean's 8, Incredibles 2. And I thought, boy, I thought the Incredibles had better pitching than that.
I saw your tweet.
Yeah. Incredibles 2, to me.
Sorry, I did not think of that myself.
Well, you know what? None of us bats 1,000 in this league, my friend. Incredibles 2 looks to me, now I didn't see the original, the first one, but it looks to me like a continuation of a storyline that was funny. And they're taking it a few different directions. It is basically what most sequels are like.
That's basically true. It's better than most in a couple of ways, and I'll tell you. But the first Incredibles was great. It's one of the best Pixar movies, and I think one of the most underrated because it really, you have to really love superhero movies to make fun of them the way that movie did. And it's about this this family of superheroes, and superheroes are outlawed, but they, you know, they still have to save the day and all that kind of thing. And that's basically what's still going on here, except that in this case, they're outlawed, and this really rich guy wants to bring them back because he likes superheroes, but he wants Elastigirl, who is the Holly Hunter's character, the mom, to be the main one. And so she gets to go out and save the world while the dad has to stay home and take care of the kids. And of course, he's terrible at it. And the and it's really funny, and it's sort of like it succeeds in a way that a couple of recent movies didn't. Like Ocean's 8, as you mentioned, that movie, that really has the moment, right? It has women. It's all women. You know, women are front and center. Women are making the decisions. Women are doing the things. But it never really takes advantage of that. It just kind of lets it lie there. Mm-hmm. I think that Incredibles 2 really takes more advantage of the cultural moment. And by the way, by not making a big deal, by not drawing attention to it, just by doing it, you know? And it's really effective that way. It's also more effective.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, and also Solo, which is a perfectly fine movie, but it doesn't really have any reason to exist. And granted, it's a prequel, and this is a sequel. But they give you a reason for this to happen. I mean, they put the mom front and center. The dad does have to face some of the sort of domestic chores and that kind of thing. And there's still, by the way, if you hear this noise, I'm standing outside the Museum of Modern Art in New York right now.
I heard you were in New York.
So you're getting some sounds of the street here. I felt like nobody wants to listen to the person talk on their phone in the middle of an art gallery. You know what I mean? So I stepped outside. But I just thought this does has a reason to exist. I liked it, but I really liked Incredibles. It's not as good as the original, but it's really good.
I was going to say real quick, Craig T. Nelson plays the husband, and when I heard him speak about the math, doing the math homework, I thought, oh, good, he's doing Hayden Fox again. Because that just sounds, I watch Coach every night now on a TV channel, one of the myriad retro TV channels, so that's what I thought. I'll tell you what, Tag, I'm really intrigued by this. That one moment where they're standing at the funeral and the guy hits the friend on the shoulder and says, you're it. How many times have we all lived through that moment? And that's why I think Tag's got a chance to really be a hit. How do you see it?
It could be. It's got a great cast. I just didn't think they quite pulled it off. It's based on a true story. And in the movie, it's five or six guys. In real life, I think it was like 12. And what they do is they started a game of tag when they were kids. And now they're adults, so they don't play it constantly, but they play it every May, May 1st to May 31st. And if you're the last guy tagged on May 31st, you're it for the whole year. And there's various forms of shaming that they have and all that. But of course, they're grown up, and so they're far flung all over the country. So they'll disguise each other. They'll fly in. One guy gets a job at another guy's company as a janitor so he can get close to him and tag him. But the gist of this one is one of the guys has never been tagged ever in 30 years, and he's going to bow out of it. He's going to get married, and he's going to bow out of the game. And the thing here is, can they get him? And you know, will he? You know, can he still get away? And the problem is, it doesn't know what to be. It doesn't know whether to be slapstick, which it often is, whether it should be comedy, which it often is, whether it be really, they try to be really heart-tugging and really try to, you know, get at you that way. It just bounces around a little bit too much. But parts of it are really funny.
Yeah, and I was intrigued by it. And it's probably one that I will get out to the theater to see. Next Tuesday, I'm taking my daughter to see American Graffiti, the Harkins classic. She's an aspiring filmmaker, and I really want her to see that movie because I think it's a great bit of filmmaking. It was one of George Lucas's first movies. So, really interesting. Let me change gears. I've been harping a little bit this week, filling in for Brad, about Fox and the U.S. Open. It seems to me this is their 4th year that they've had the rights to the U.S. Open, and it seems like every year prior, they've been part of the storyline because they botched something. And I was saying yesterday on the show, name me one sport other than the NFL that Fox has been involved with that they've really done something really innovative or positive. They had the BCS for 3 years. Nobody liked that. They had the NHL. Everybody laughed at the glowing puck. And here we are again with the U.S. Open. They got to get it right this time.
They sort of. I mean, as long as they keep writing those checks.
They
give a lot. Yeah, I mean, but yes, I would like for them to. I think that you're right. I think that if you think back, though, when they got the NFL, everybody's like, oh, this is going to be a disaster. They're not going to be any good. And that, they actually improved. They
Oh, no question.
They ramped up the number of cameras to Monday Night Football levels and to where it was just expected. They've done, you know, people didn't like the graphics at first. Now they're state-of-the-art. They're just expected. They can't quite seem to get it together on the on the golf front. And I think, truly, that broadcasting golf is probably harder than it seems because you're following multiple storylines, but you're really only following one. You're following the leader the last 2 days, right? The leader.
Right.
But then something may happen, you know, a few holes ahead. You gotta do that. So I think there's part of it, and I don't know who the director is, but I think direction is really important when you're covering golf because it's unlike football or even hockey or basketball or whatever. In those sports, one thing's going on. In golf, 127 things are going on at one time. And you gotta pick your spots. It's almost like a feel thing. You have to know what people want to see at that time. Now, if Tiger's in the mix, that makes it easy. You know, you follow him.
Right. Well, that may, yeah.
To a lesser extent, Mickelson. I mean, but what are the chances of that? I mean, you know, they'll make some noise Thursday and Friday and get tired and, you know, sort of
right.
get out. And so at that point, what do you do? And lately, some of the majors have been, you know, just about runaways. So I don't know. It's sticky and it's tricky. But if they keep writing those checks,
well,
they get to keep making those mistakes.
Right. And they've also written a really big check. I got about 30 seconds. They've written a huge check to the NFL to do Thursday nights. And I don't know if you've been able to catch some of the chatter in the industry. I'm curious to see if Fox's approach with Thursday night is, we'll just do it the way we do it on Sundays, or we're going to roll out something really different to make it stand out.
I don't know that they're doing anything different. I know that they're going with broadcast team, the number one broadcast team with Buck and Aikman, and they got a better schedule. The Thursday night schedule is what was killing people, and they got that and the quick turnaround. But they've maybe it's all that money. I guess it is, but they've gotten a much better schedule than the other networks have gotten in the past few years for Thursday night.
Be a fascinating weekend. They also have the World Cup, and they had that on this morning, so they're going to be pretty busy. Bill, appreciate it. Enjoy New York. Travel safe, my friend.
Thank you.
Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Gannett, Chief Film and Media Critic. Always love talking the biz with Goody. Hey, look, you want to know what's going on in sports this weekend here in the state of Arizona? Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZCentralSports.com. And you can keep up to date on everything. And you'll say to yourself, well, what's going on in the state this weekend? If you stay this website, you'll know exactly everything that's going on. And there's a bunch. So stick with sports360az.com. And we thank azcentralsports.com for their partnership with us. And we thank you for being with us today on the Brad Sesmatch Show.